welcome to another episode of India on Cricket 8, your number one cricket podcast for all things Indian cricket related. As always, I'm your host, Nikesh Raghani, commentator, broadcaster and journalist. And joining me this week, I'm delighted to say, is sports presenter and producer Megha Sinha. Megha, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much and so happy to be a part.
And you're joining us from Delhi today. How's Delhi looking?
Chilly. It wasn't supposed to be that too in February, but it is pretty cold. And I think if the English team was to come in Delhi, they wouldn't have complained.
Yeah, a little bit more English conditions, I suppose. It's still very cold here in the UK, by the way, in February. So I'm sure it's a little bit warmer over in Delhi. But obviously, we're not here to talk about Delhi. We're here to talk about Rajkot and the third test that is going to be taking place between India and England over there. Really nicely poised series at the moment, Megha, as well. One all going into that third test match. How are you feeling about the series so far?
As a fan, really excited because I think as far as neutrals are concerned, they couldn't have asked for more. But even if you're a partisan fan, be it English fan or Indian fan, you have it one all. So you couldn't have asked for more. But from here on, the real deal starts. It's kind of shootout and pretty nervy for sure.
And India, of course, not used to being in this position so early in a series at home, especially losing the first test match, of course, coming back well to win the second against this England side as well, which plays test cricket in a very different way, a very unorthodox way, the new modern way, I suppose, of test cricket. They call it Bazball. They call it all sorts of things. It seems to have worked for them so far, and it's given India a little bit of a kick up the backside, I feel, in that first test match in particular. And even in the second test match, look, they set England 399 to win, and there wasn't a lot of confidence coming from India fans and perhaps even the Indian camp as to whether or not the job is definitely done, because nobody chases 400 to win in the final innings of a test match in India. But with this England side, we thought it might be possible.
Indeed. And you could see that in the coach Rahul Dravid's reaction, because generally he isn't animated. But then if he is animated, it means that things have gotten pretty tight. And then apart from that, of course, India had a sort of deja vu of 2022, because that was the time when Bazball was beginning to take shape. And they had set a target of around 378 that was chased down, albeit very different conditions. But also the fact, again, Indian team management also commented on it, that pitchers aren't really reliable. They are told they are rank turners, and on the first day, you see plenty of runs being scored. So it hasn't been pretty consistent. And we saw that in the second test as well. As the game progressed, apparently the pitch became slightly better. So never say never again with this team, and with James Anderson proclaiming there that they would have chased 600 as well. So, I mean, that does contribute in ensuring that the fans are at the edge of their seats. But in the end, all's well that ends well as far as the second test is concerned.
Yeah, India managing to close that one out then in the end. And, lots of good bowling, in particular from Jasprit Bumrah, Kuldeep Yadav, contributing well as well. Now, we don't know how the Indian team is going to look in that third test match. There's been lots of news in the build-up, of course. Let's start with the biggest news. Virat Kohli is out for the rest of the series, obviously citing personal reasons at the start of the series for initially missing those first two matches. We know now that he's going to play no part in this five-match series. The first time since he made his test debut that he's not been involved in an entire test series. He's missed matches, of course, through injury and other reasons as well. Paternity leave, as we remember, in that famous tour of Australia a couple of years back. But this is big, and we obviously wish him well with whatever he's dealing with in his personal life. AB de Villiers kind of may or may not have let slip exactly what's going on. That was a little bit controversial as well. But whatever he's dealing with, we wish him all the very best, of course. But from a purely cricketing perspective, he is going to be missed massively.
Enormously. I mean, to talk not specifically about the game, but to begin with the fact that what a brilliant ambassador he is of the game. And not specifically to the situations of the series, but what a big ambassador he is. And when he's on field, it's not just the crowd that is always pumped up, because he makes sure to kind of orchestrate that. But apart from that as well, on the field, you see The bowlers are more energized, the celebrations are more animated. But beyond that, as a batter, there was a period in which he wasn't contributing much with the bat, but thankfully for Indian fans, that is in the past. He'd come back to become a comeback in the sense that he had made a comeback as far as his form is concerned to become once again a crucial cog in the wheel for India. So, of course, from batting point of view, India would be missing him. India did miss him in the first two games. And remember the first innings of the first test where there were batters who got out playing attacking shots. I mean, that was kind of an answer to baseball and that served India well because they got 190 runs lead. But then you did wonder that there were 70, 80 runs that India didn't collect, and that was because of the batters being uber aggressive, going for those sixes. But then had Virat Kohli been there, that probably wouldn't have been the case because his is controlled aggression. His is calculated cricket. He would be aggressive, but those would be grounded shots. So just that maturity in the batting lineup, because Rohit Sharma, of course, off late, regardless of the format, he's known to set the tempo top of the order. And then even in the ODI World Cup, we saw how important Virat Kohli was to provide that stability in the middle. And probably that gave Rohit Sharma the license to actually go hammer and tongs at the start. That has been missing. And now with Shreyas Iyer, of course, being dropped and KL Rahul missing for the second straight test, where's that experience in the middle order?
Yeah, those are the two other big bits of news, really, from the Indian batting perspective as well. No KL Rahul. He was named in the squad for the final three tests, but he's not going to be fit enough to play in Rajkot. And Shreyas Iyer was deemed to be fit. Look, initially, I don't know what your thoughts are on this. I'll get your thoughts in just a moment. But we hear so much, don't we, when players are dropped from this Indian side. Selectors don't like using the word dropped, or certainly the old guard. You know, we've got the new chief of selectors, Ajit Agarkar, of course, now in charge. Things might change. It was always, oh, this player's out with a back spasm. I mean, it seems as though back spasms are sort of contagious across the Indian batting order in recent years, really. They don't like to use the word dropped. They don't like to make it seen as if a player has been dismissed, basically, for his poor form and told to go back and regain some form before he's going to be considered for selection again. In this case, initially, that was the news, wasn't it? That Shreyas Iyer has got some back issues, he's having back spasms. And we all thought, well, here we go again. But actually, he was cleared to be fit to play in the third test match, but hasn't been selected for the final three matches of this series. What would you make of all that?
You see, there is this meme template about who's next going to get that back spasm. Because, of course, the underperforming players eventually end up getting that magically. Or maybe it's a way of cushioning the players from the scrutiny. But then, again, it doesn't help much. Because at the end of the day, particularly in this case, you saw both sort of reports emerging. One being, of course, him suffering from back spasm and the other being him dropped. Now, talking about what value addition he could have brought, we talk about his game against spin. And we've seen that across formats. Particularly in ODIs, where he's proven himself to be a good spin hitter in the middle overs. But that was not on showcase in this series. And runs have not come out of his bat in the last 1 year in the format. So how long can the Indian team persist with it? That question, of course, kept popping up. And then eventually he had to be dropped. So India, of course, moved on from Chetheshwar Pujara and Ajinkya Rahane, because in their case, the problem was very different. I know I'm touching upon Pandora's box, but in their case, the problem was very different. They'd score in one game and then there'd be a lean patch following that. But in Shreyas Iyer's case, that one big score also had become elusive. So it made sense to not persist with him. It made sense to select him in the first place for the series because, of course, you thought about it, that Indian conditions, wickets might offer some spin and Shreyas Iyer being a spin basher might just be the ideal answer in the middle order to baseball. But that didn't turn out to be the case. Now, again, with Sarfaraz Khan, I know you'd be arriving at that point sooner or later, but then Sarfaraz Khan is another option. He's batted in the middle order. He's very good against spin. The weakness that is cited in his case is very similar to Shreyas Iyer's weakness, that is short pitch delivery, pace. And anyway, if somebody has that confidence of runs behind him against England Lions in the domestic cricket, why not try him out? So I'm assuming that he might just get the test cap. But then, again, coming back to the Shreyas Iyer scenario, how long could India have just banked on the potential?
Well, if he does get the test cap, then, you know, it's been a long time coming in a lot of people's eyes for Sarfaraz. But Let's talk through the inexperience of this Indian batting lineup first and foremost. Going into Rajkot, Rohit Sharma, 56 test matches, captain, no problem at all there. Yashasvi Jaiswal, just the 6 test matches. Of course, he's in brilliant form. He's such a talent and will be a fixture at the top of the order for quite some time. Shubman Gill, 22 test matches, so a fair bit of experience. And thankfully for him, regaining some form, because his head could have been on the chopping block next after Shreyas Iyer being dropped for these final 3 tests, because Gill's form has been very questionable, especially since moving to number 3 in that order, but coming back with 100 there. And then you've got Rajat Patidar, 1 test, making his debut, obviously, in that second test match. Kenneth Parra, 7 test matches, hasn't really done anything with the bat. And then you've got Sarfaraz Khan, Devdutt Padikkal, who's been called up to the squad in place of KL Rahul, given that injury, and Dhruv Jurel, the keeper batter as well, yet to make his debut. So there's such little experience in that lineup. Given all that, you've touched on Pujara there and Rahane, but, you know, Pujara, it's his home ground. He's my friend, Chetashwar Pujara, so I, there might be a little bit of bias in here, but just judging on his recent form as well, 62nd first-class 100 he brought up last week. He's in good form. He's going to be playing at his home ground. Was this an opportunity for India, just given the injury situation, to call up somebody like a Pujara and say, you know what, just give us one last hurrah?
In response to that, barring that, of course, innings that you're alluding to, there was a period in between where runs were not coming. He started the season with a bang, but in between there was this lull. And also, what message does it send to the fans in general and to the others toiling to make it to the Indian team? Because they can't just keep going back to the player and then dropping him. There has to be a clear message that comes out of whatever selection decisions the team makes. Because in Ajinkya Rahane's case as well, now this was World Test Championships finals. And again, there was this chaos in between because of injury situations. KL Rahul was not available. So eventually, for bringing in that experience, India did go back to Ajinkya Rahane. He did contribute. India did then think that maybe he could provide more answers. But then there were further questions that popped up during the West Indies series. So again, India someday or the other has to invest in youngsters. And probably the series, the message that is coming out of the series is that going younger is the way to go. Because remember, English spin attack, how much experience did they have coming into the series? Jack Leach notwithstanding, the other 3 had just 1 test experience combined. So, I mean, that's again how it has transpired in England's case. But otherwise as well, I think going back to Pujara, and again, just for this one Rajkot test, or were you looking at it long term? Were you looking at it from the point of the series? So, I mean, that is my question to you. How were you looking at it?
Look, I mean, the injury situation's going to potentially go on for the rest of the series. We know Kohli's not in for the rest of the 3 test matches, at least. So how do you replicate that kind of experience given the options on the table, really? And we don't know how serious KL Rahul's injury is. Could he be out for Rajkot? Could he be out for the 4th test match as well? We just don't know at this stage. And, you know, even with somebody like a KL Rahul, yes, he's got relative experience, but when it comes to test match cricket, really, he's not one of the old guard. And I completely get what you mean, though, with England coming in with such an inexperienced spin attack, and not just an inexperienced spin attack. I mean, you look through their batting lineup as well. Yes, they've got Root and they've got Stokes. Apart from that, there's a lot of inexperience in and around there. They've got Ben Duckett, Zach Crawley opening the batting. Not a lot of experience between them. They seem to have done a good job. I suppose when you are going to blood youngsters, the one crucial thing is, and this is where Rohit Sharma's captaincy will be tested, is how you manage these players, how you manage them, because you don't want to put any pressure on them. The fear of failure needs to be completely taken away. That's what Ben Stokes has done with all of his young players that have come in during his tenure as captain. And I think Rohit Sharma would do well to take a leaf out of that book, that, you know, say to these youngsters like Patidar, like Sarfaraz, like Jurel, if he comes in, anybody who's making their debuts or playing early on in their career, you just go and play your game. We back you 100%. You're going to be playing for India for many years to come. Just go out and do your thing. And most of all, have fun, right? Don't, you know, just cut out all the outside noise. I know it's easier said than done, but that's where that sort of man management comes in, and you know, he needs to constantly be in communication with these players, put an arm around them, just make it known that you are his guy. He's not going to drop you if you have a couple of low scores. As long as you show your potential, you play the way you know how to play. Yes, people are going to get out in Test cricket. You might lose your wicket early on, but you just keep backing the process. That's the key thing. Back your process. Keep doing everything right you can. And as long as you keep going through that process every time, eventually things will turn. So that's the way they've got to go. Look, there's no point, I suppose, now talking about somebody like a Chetheshwar Pujara because it's clearly not going to happen. It's, you know, it's the way the selectors have gone. It's the way the captain has gone.
You are allowed to, considering that you do share some equation with them. So,
yeah, I mean, look, it's a question a lot of people have been asking, right? We've got to talk about it. There was an opportunity for India to bring him in. They decided not to, and that's fair enough. You know, everybody's going to have an opinion on that, whether it was right, whether it was wrong. But they've got to go with what's in front of them now. So, given all that, how do you see India's batting lineup looking? You've got Rohit, Jaiswal and Gill pretty much locked in. What comes after that?
So let's explore the options that follow the trio that you just mentioned. Sarfaraz Khan, he's batted fair bit in the middle order. So between that fourth and fifth position, either of them can work. Similarly, in case of Devdutt Padikkal, now it's fair enough that we converse in detail about him because a lot of the fans remember him as this IPL star, particularly in his debut season. After that, his form tapered. And the reason why I'm bringing this topic up is when he was opening the innings, he got those truckloads of runs. Once he was demoted in the middle order, those runs stopped flowing. And that became the case once he shifted to Rajasthan Royals. There was a time in between when he was dropped as well. But all that considered, thankfully for him, and it was a very sensible decision on his part as well to take it, also forced by necessity, because even in the Karnataka team, there was no position in the opening, there was no opening position up for grabs for him. So that's why he then shifted to the middle order, third, fourth position. Although for India, he did get to open and scored important runs there. But again, the point is that he has contributed, he has scored important runs in the middle order. And even in his first domestic season, he created a splash across the three tournaments. Sweet Syed Mushtaq Ali Trophy, Vijay Hazare Trophy or Ranji Trophy. That's the first class competition in India. So he has runs behind him. Second season Blues did accompany him. But all that is behind now because his debut season was in 1920. And since then, he's kind of matured. Although that seems a heavy word for a 23-year-old. But he has a reasonable IPL and domestic experience. So as far as the nerves are concerned, I think they'd be pretty settled. And he can occupy that number four position. Again, Sarfaraz Khan as well is a contender for that middle order slot. And also is obviously Dhruv Jurel, who'd come slightly down the order if Srikar Bharat indeed gets replaced. And then you obviously also need to know whether Jadeja is playing or not, because we've seen Akshar Patel being promoted and Indian team, particularly in the middle order, hasn't really been very rigid. We saw that in the Bangladesh series as well, 2022N, when obviously you needed a left-handed option and then the team was in a tricky situation chasing against Bangladesh. And from the point of view of World Test Championship as well, that series was extremely important. India promoted Akshar Patel and he scored those crucial runs. So, but at this moment, we don't even know whether Akshar Patel would be featuring in the 11 or not, because that is contingent upon Jadeja's return. Because you'd reckon that Indian team would back Kuldeep Yadav, considering the three crucial wickets that he got. And not just the three crucial wickets. I understand I'm kind of jumbling up the topics, but they're also interrelated. But I would like to talk about Kuldeep Yadav, how important he is, not just in terms of what impact he can have, that is our broad understanding of the subject, but also the fact, like in the previous game, it kind of took away one weapon from England's arsenal, and that was the varieties of sweep that they came up with, because the bounce that he's able to extract, his wicket-to-wicket line, and just that wrist spin angle. So all of that combined, England did look apprehensive going for those varieties of reverse sweep, one that kind of crippled India in the third innings of the first test.
Yeah, I mean, Kuldeep, since 2021, when he was going through such a bad period, I mean, there was that series down in Australia, obviously, you know, winning at the Gabba and winning that series with a completely depleted squad, you know, net bowlers making test debuts. All of that was happening, but the one person who didn't play a single match, who was there for the whole of that test series in Australia was Kuldeep Yadav. And, you know, you just kind of wonder what kind of mental, you know, impact that had on him as a cricketer. And you could see that really. He was dropped from all Indian squads, really, whether it's white ball, red ball, for the year or so after that. And even then, you know, there were sort of recalls here and there, and he never quite performed and never quite really had his zip, even when he was playing in IPL following that. And it's really in the last sort of 8 or 9 months where Kuldeep Yadav has become such an important part of particularly India's ODI and T20 plans, but also now in Test cricket, because it gives you that wrist spin option. And when he's, you know, bowling like he has in this series, truly world class. And players, as you say, from the England team, that's one skill which, when we talk about English batters or you know, foreign batters coming to India playing in spinning conditions, a lot of them seem to have found a good way to take on the finger spin. And even then, look, it's, you know, they're not always that successful against the likes of Jadeja and Ashwin in particular, and even Akshar. But when you've got that wrist spin to contend with, and you know, he bowls such a good googly as well, Kuldeep Yadav, really, really difficult, really clever, mixing up his pace and his sort of flight and trajectory as well. So I think he's a massive weapon. And I think he, for me, he has to play in the remaining matches of this series if he's fit, because he just gives you something completely different. I was going to ask you, given that Rajkot, look, it tends to be a bit of a belter. We know it's usually quite a flat deck there, particularly at the start of a test match. You know, the last time India played England there in a test match, yeah. What was it, 650 runs or something, 650 for six declared, Karan Nair triple 100. You know, it can be one of those tracks on occasion. Ravindra Jadeja's got three triple centuries in first-class cricket playing on that ground as well. So it shows you that it can be pretty flat. Given all that, and given it's got a very short test history, just a couple of test matches have been played there in history, so we can't go too much on those test matches in particular. But in first-class cricket, a lot of runs are scored there. Seamers do tend to be fairly successful. The likes of Jaydev Unadkat, who's captain of Saurashtra, has got a brilliant record there, but he's a very special bowler in those conditions. Do you think India go in with two seamers and three spinners? Can they afford to go four spinners? Because if you look at it, I mean, taking the track aside, Siraj didn't do a lot in the first test match. Yeah. Mukesh Kumar was, in all fairness, look, you don't like to be too harsh on somebody who's not really accustomed to bowling well in these conditions, probably more suited to England or New Zealand or South Africa. He was useless in the second test match. It was really nice to see him get that wicket in the end, and, you know, the smile on his face. And you know, you want to see somebody doing well against all odds. But look, we could have done without Mukesh Kumar in that test match, let's face it, and maybe played an extra spinner, maybe a Washington Sundar in that case. But look, if Jadeja is fit, can you play Jadeja, Akshar Patel, Kuldeep Yadav and Ravichandran Ashwin?
What a tempting idea, but I really liked how you balanced your scrutiny of Mukesh Kumar, because eventually the word useless did come up. Anyway, moving on. But there's been this constant conversation around Jasprit Bumrah's workload. So I think that has been the primary reason, because to Mukesh's credit, the fact that the ball had begun reversing, that emerged from his spell. And then again, Bumrah was brought in the first innings of the previous test. But beyond that as well, you'd expect maybe if Siraj is making a comeback for him to make more contributions. But again, Jasprit Bumrah's workload, India has been backing that two-pacer strategy throughout. And probably that's all boiling down to the fact that you do not want to overbowl Bumrah. You just want to use him in short spells. Maybe when he's getting those wickets, you might persist with him a little longer, but you can't overexert him. Like we say, the hen that lays golden egg, you can't kill it. And similarly, we've seen with the wickets thus far, they've been very unpredictable. And then it's not just about the opening burst, it's about the reverse swing as well. So you would expect your pacers, the second pacer in particular, to draw something out of it, because if all of a sudden the wicket is not conducive as much for the spinners, you'd want to be prepared, because the Indian team, and same with England as well, they do not have seam bowling all-rounders. Although England does have a seam bowling all-rounder, but the seam part at the moment is not really working out for them. courtesy, obviously, Ben Stokes's injury. But I guess that's the rationale. But you've made a fair point. I think I'm thinking about it more from batting point of view, because the three spinners that you just talked about, they all bring that batting experience, particularly in the Indian conditions. Last year as well, the Border Gavaskar Trophy played in India, those four tests you saw, barring that one test, of course, which saw truckloads of runs being scored by both the teams and it ended up in a draw. But you saw the spinners chipping in, and those were crucial runs. Those eventually proved to be the differentiator. So are you looking at them as batting all-rounders? Are you looking at them as all-rounders? And this is not an outrageous thought, because Akshar Patel, remember that West Indies series, ODI game, he won us the game with the bat. And then similarly, in the Bangladesh game of the Asia Cup as well, he was absolutely handy with the bat. He brought the Indian team very close. So Akshar Patel as a batter has shown those nerves. And considering how inexperienced Indian batting lineup is, it would be a difficult call if you're considering dropping Akshar Patel. But then if you do not drop him and Jadeja is available, that is quite a dilemma. So I did entertain that thought, both in the first and second game, that what is the second pacer doing? But then maybe just providing that cushion.
We'll wait and see what they do. So we both agreed that Bumrah has to play. There's no option, right? I mean, without Bumrah, this would have been 2-0 and 2-0 quite comfortably to England.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Right. Not much more to say on Bumrah then.
You know, you left me speechless there. Just imagining the scenario, but absolutely so crucial, because you look at the averages, you look at the difference between the spin attack of both the teams, and that is absolutely mind-boggling, because over the period of last decade, we've seen how much Indian spinners have dominated, how wide the gap has been between them and the visiting team. But in this particular series, that gap didn't just narrow, but actually the England spinners managed to perform better than the Indian spinners. You talk about Hartley's second innings performance or otherwise as well. We've seen that they've been more effective. But there's another factor to consider over here, luck factor has worked in England's favour, because English spinner, for all the false shots that they've induced, they've managed to get more wickets, and India did with the same percentage of false shots. So all in all, absolutely agreeing with you that Jasprit Bumrah has been the point of difference between the two sides, because although England had Anderson for the second test, and Anderson too managed to get that reverse swing, and then he did manage to create wicket-taking opportunities, but Jasprit Bumrah with those six wickets in the first innings in the previous test, that obviously proved to be the point of difference, and that 143 runs lead eventually counting.
Absolutely. So, I mean, look, a little message for the Indian selectors, if anyone is listening out there, just let him play these final three test matches. I mean, look, there's been a 10-day gap between these two test matches in particular. If they were going to rest him at all during this series, the fourth test match might be the opportunity to do so. But this is a big test series. This is a marquee test series. If you're not going to have your best player when he's available, when he's fit, playing throughout the entire test series, then what's the point of, you know, all this domestic cricket, all this IPL that he plays? At the end of the day, you're doing it to play for your country, right? This is the highest level. This is the purest form of the game. There's an argument to say, look, if he needs a rest before the T20 World Cup, give him a few games off during the IPL, give him a week or two off during that, you know. And I know there's a lot of money involved, and I know he's then employed by the Mumbai Indians, but at the end of the day, the BCCI runs the IPL, right? So there is that opportunity, not just with him, but with certain other players who they might feel have a lot of burnout and need to be a little bit fresher for that T20 World Cup. That could be an opportunity to rest them. So that's my argument. And, you know, I don't know whether it will happen, because we tend to see players skipping international cricket sometimes and not skipping much IPL cricket, but that's a whole different argument altogether. But for this test match, Bumrah, we expect to be in, and it's whether or not he'll be partnered by another seamer there to open the bowling, or whether or not India go in with three or four spinners. We'll wait and see. In terms of spin then, you touched on it there as well. England's spinners have so far on paper and in reality really out-bowled India's spinners in large parts of this test match series so far. Not much experience, and they're not going to get all that experience back now for the rest of the series because Jack Leach misses out.
Yeah.
He's injured. He's not going to be fit enough to play any further part in the series. What do England do?
Well, they persist with what they have persisted with. And of course, we saw how Ben Stokes uses his spinners because, of course, Hartley was not the first one to return with a 5-4 on his debut. The same was the case with Rehan Ahmed when he was in Pakistan. I mean, just that confidence that is given to the spinners or to anybody for that matter. We saw in the first innings, Hartley wasn't that successful. It was his six against Ashwin that was celebrated. So the burden of expectation is not much. And Ben Stokes is aware of that when it comes to his inexperienced spinners. And then whatever they do is kind of bonus because, of course, they do not have that much first-class experience. I mean, even in terms of the numbers of overs bowled, they are outdoing themselves. And that is in large, you know, to a great extent owing to how much confidence Ben Stokes has shown in them, how he's deployed them. But also coming to this debate about Indian spinners not matching up to the English spinners in this series, a credit must also be given to the English batters, barring that first innings when they looked timid in the first test. But in the second innings, of course, Pope got that lifeline, couple of lifelines. But otherwise as well, just the decision to not be intimidated by the good length. The good length area in the first innings was yielding rewards for the spinners, not to show that respect, go for those wide varieties of sweep shots, the reverse angles. So that really ensured that the Indian spinners couldn't trust their good length. And after that, they had to kind of alter things. They had to experiment too much. And then those things stopped working out. So credit really to the English batters. But then in the second game, when the bounce was uneven, and those varieties of spin were kind of, sweeps were kind of not as much in the picture. You saw England was slightly on the back foot. So again, with so much of experience, and particularly in case of Ashwin, we keep talking about how much experience he has, how he uses that experience. What a studious cricketer he is. You'd expect him to come up with more plans and more homework. He's got this 10-day period in between when he could have obviously done further research. You'd expect Indian spinners to stage a comeback because, like you mentioned at the start, now B 2016 series against Australia, India did start on the back foot because they lost the first game. When England toured in 2021 season as well, the first game India lost to England. Truckloads of runs were scored in the first innings. But there again, both the Indian team and the Indian spinners made a comeback. So maybe that's on the cards. And because you discussed about Kuldeep Yadav, now remember that 2021 series against England as well, Kuldeep was in the 11. But he bowled precious little because Akshar Patel was doing well. Other spinners were doing well. But then again, this time around, of course, he's back in form. And Akshar Patel as well, just to analyze a bit from bowling point of view, in the final innings of the previous test, we expected him to create more damage. He did manage a wicket there, but with the bounce that he's is in a position to extract because of his height, with the rough created, you thought he'd get more wickets, but it didn't turn out to be the case. He has struggled with his bowling for quite a considerable period of time, although after his return from injury, we saw a better, a revised version of Akshar Patel, the bowler, doing fairly better. But again, when it comes to shouldering the responsibility as the Indian spinner, he hasn't managed to shoulder as much responsibility as you'd expect him to.
Yeah, and look, I think it's going to be a fascinating battle between the spinners from both sides. We expect Jimmy Anderson to play in this test match, again, given that 10-day gap between the two test matches. Of course, slightly different situation to Jasprit Bumrah in terms of not only is he England's most valuable seamer, especially in these conditions with a reverse swing that he's able to extract. He's in his 40s as well. So it's not as easy to recover for a fast bowler in his 40s, although he's in brilliant shape. But, you know, age catches up with us all. And, you know, I don't know if he would have been able to play these test matches back to back had they been so. So he'll play in this one, we expect. Whether or not he plays in the fourth and they bring in Mark Wood, we don't know. Remains to be seen. Ollie Robinson, obviously, another option as well. Talking of England spinners, though, as well, issue with Rehan Ahmed, visa. He is in India, had a single entry visa, which, to be fair, he should have checked. But also the ECB should have been completely on top of these sorts of things because he had the same visa that he was granted for the ODI World Cup, but didn't travel to India. He was a reserve for India, for England rather, during that tournament in India, so didn't travel. So still had his single entry visa, which he used then to enter India for the first two test matches. But obviously England went to Abu Dhabi in between. God knows why, maybe a little golf holiday, whatever it was. Apparently they didn't take their cricket kit with them, which is interesting. So I don't know how much practice or anything went on. He's not into golf. He can't stand golf. Yeah. He's been quite vocal about that. He says it's a rubbish sport or something like that. And he doesn't understand why people play it. But lots of the England players do play it. But Rehan probably just enjoying a little break there in Abu Dhabi. But look, on re-entry into India, it was, you know, an issue that was raised by immigration that, look, you've got a single entry visa. He has been granted a temporary visa. So common sense has prevailed. And the England team management are hopeful that the issue will be resolved in the coming days as well. And that visa will then be extended so that he, you know, takes in the entire test series. So we don't envisage that being a problem. But again, you know, it's England and their logistics, and it sort of raises a few question marks as to whether the person or the people in charge of these things are completely on top of things or not. But the good news is that Rehan Ahmed, from an England point of view, is in India. He is practicing with the rest of the team and is available for selection for the Rajkot test match as things stand as well. So they'll obviously hope he plays a big part in that test match for England. Just before we finish off this episode then, I'm not going to ask you for a prediction or anything like that. It's too early for a series. I mean, you know, if it was the start of the series, I might have pushed you on what's this series going to play out like. It's difficult to tell how these three test matches are going to go, but surely this is England's best ever chance, despite Jack Leach not being there, of winning a test series in India in a very long time. 2012 was the last time, of course. Swan, Monty Panesar, Kevin Peterson, all those guys contributing so well through that series. Alistair Cook, of course. Surely it's the best chance, just given India's middle order, India's injury problems, you know, selection of Kohli isn't possible through this series as well. And the way England are playing and their new attitude and their new style of cricket, they've got a great chance.
You know, actually, at the start of the series, probably England themselves too didn't give much of a chance to their own chances, because ahead of the series, you'd hear players talking about how challenging conditions are in India. And for anybody, for any expert, for any fan ahead of the series, they wouldn't have had much expectations of baseball in India. Simply because of the fact that the threat that baseball inspired early on, you remember that streak when they were winning all of those matches that they were playing, maybe Ashes kind of put a sort of halt to it. And following that, of course, we saw in between New Zealand series as well, where there was this one run win and a draw. So that is one angle, of course, to consider. And also the fact that they were in India, conditions were not conducive to the sort of attack that they could boast in India. But then again, with the sort of performance that they came up in the first game, and that's why Ole Pope's 196 is rated so highly, because that kind of didn't just brought about a shift in the scoreline, what potentially could have been the scoreline, but also the shift in thinking. You saw from India's perspective, when they were setting that target in the second innings, there was this concern, there was this thought that what would be enough, because you saw Shubman Gill, even after India had managed to eke out a wicket on the third day itself towards the end, that it's still a 70-30 scenario. Come on, 399 is a target. You can't say, you can't predict it to be a 70-30 scenario. So just that thought of, that doubt that England has managed to sow in the minds of not just Indian fans, but also Indian team, I think that is some sort of victory. But from here on, it's obviously going to be very challenging. The first test is going to be crucial. First test following the break, that is the third test in the series, because the mental battles that are also being fought, which includes quotes like 600 would have been chased down. So the mental battles, they probably would take an important direction with how the third game transpires. So, but what is your prediction? Let me still pester you.
Are you going to push
me
for a prediction? What, a series prediction or a third test prediction?
Series.
Well, look, at the start of the series, what did I say? 4-1 to India. So we're still on track for that. I might have to tone that down a little bit. Let's go for 3-2 and let's say India.
So
I'll stick with my India prediction. I think England, the way they performed, there's another test in it for them.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But ahead of the series, when you said 4-1, which was that one test that you were ready to give to England?
The one test was probably Rajkot, because of the fact that it's a flat batting track, usually. And that's where Bazball works best, especially with the intent that England show with the bat, and they're able to take a few more risks on a track like that. As it's turned out, look, I mean, the pitches have so far been really good for cricket, really, just really good test match pitches, both of them so far. And coming into the series, obviously lots of talk from the English media about dust bowls and spinning tracks. Mm. And it was interesting that Ollie Pope said at the start of the series that we won't complain if we're given dust bowls or turning tracks from day one. And such has been the case. I mean, they haven't been given those tracks, but they haven't complained at all about anything that's happened in the series so far. That's not the way this England team is. And I think it just shows, you know, how good they are in terms of just getting on with whatever the challenge is in front of them. And that's proven to be the case so far. Fascinating three test matches ahead of us anyway, starting with Rajkot, which starts on Thursday, of course. And once that test match concludes, we'll have another episode for you here on India on Cricket 8 as well. But for now, that's all we've got time for on this third test preview. Huge thanks to you, Megha, for coming on. Where can listeners find you on social media?
NomadicSoul19 across the platforms.
Excellent. So do go and give her a follow. You can follow me at Nikesh Raghani across all platforms, X, Instagram, Facebook, whatever it might be. And follow Cricket 8 as well. Follow our YouTube channel. Do give us a like and subscribe, whether you're listening to us and watching us on YouTube or whether it's via your podcast provider as well. Do spread the word. Remember, we'll be back next week with a review of the third test match. But for now, thanks for listening and goodbye.